It's my pleasure to introduce Elizabeth. Is it Wheelbacher or Wahlbacher?
Wahlbacher.
Wahlbacher. And I hope this is not too intimidating a place to have you. We kind of got you way over there, but...
It should be fine.
Okay. That is the power position for the council. That's where the attorney sits.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, tell us about your experience and how that would fit in with being on the Citizens Police Review Board.
I do think I have a lot of experience. I obviously had an issue with the police review board that was reviewed about a year or so ago, 2 years ago, where I actually took a class. I took the Citizens Police Academy class where I learned a lot about the police department and some of their procedures. And I know a lot of the cases that you're getting are use of force cases. That is your general complaint of how much use of force, and that taking that training has been opened my eyes to a lot of the things that the police department does and as far as their discretion on a case. So I do think I have a lot of experience that way of dealing or knowing a little bit of the backstory to the police department. Going through that class and actually going on a ride along also was a great experience, and I recommend everyone take that class and actually do a couple ride alongs if you can.
Ms. Anthony?
And your interest, what caused you to do that, take that course, I guess is the
basically question. I wanted to know about my case. I was kind of a little bit still uneasy with how it went about. My case of getting two tickets issued for a traffic violation, and I was just wondering how that came to be, and I was wondering if there was some way I could prevent that situation. And I figured education would be the best way to learn more about the police department and figure out how I would go about correcting those issues in the future.
So they were traffic violations? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it was a fender bender, basically.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two tickets you were issued and you just didn't like the process that
Right. Okay. I was issued a second ticket, but the first one wasn't still voided yet, so.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was,
okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to know what your, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the Police Review Board has the right amount of power, or should they have more authority in their judgments?
I think they need a little bit more authority. I do think it comes from having more, I guess, kind of backing from either individual officers and also the chief, making sure that they fully support the police review board. Because there's been a lot of issues where the board and the police department don't necessarily agree with what the findings are. And so I think that there needs to be a lot more support between the two departments. But I do think they need a little bit, maybe not more power, but more vision and respect from the department.
I don't know if you've had experience sitting on a group like this before, but what do you think you could bring to a group of folks that maybe you haven't met before, you know, in that type of environment? What's your immediate impact on the group going to be?
I think I would be... bring to the table is I'm very open about my opinion. I also like to listen to other people's views, and I'm very swayed towards their try to have a general full understanding also before I form my opinion for sure. I also like to research things. My background is in research, so I want to make sure that I'm forming an education decision before actually going through with it.
Boy, all my questions have taken up. Maybe just to offer a general question in terms of what unique perspectives do you think you bring to this board that perhaps aren't there right now? Or
okay, one of the things that I would like to do if I am placed on the board, as I think that you're kind of asking, is that when we're not reviewing maybe complaints or something, maybe in a downtime, which I know there's not usually that any downtime in this kind of situation, is to review some of those protocols and procedures that the police department needs to update. There's a lot of things that things are done just how they've always been done, and that's not necessarily the right way to do things nowadays, and that we need to really concentrate on updating protocols and procedures to prevent some of these issues from happening.
That kind of leads into my question. Do you see the board as setting policy for the police department, or tweaking the policy, or advising?
I mainly see advising. There's obviously always going to be a lack of knowledge from the board standpoint rather than being in the shoes of a police officer. So definitely advising on those protocols and procedures is the way to go.
What is your, give me your sense of the relationship between the Citizens Police Review Board and the Columbia Police Officers Association right now. Is it a is it adversarial? Is it too adversarial? Is it positive? What is coming in from sort of the outside and with your experience? How do you view that relationship?
I haven't really seen many things that are, I guess, positive as far as the Police Review Board making judgment on cases that are brought to it. So I think that it should be something that needs to be improved, basically.
Yeah. Given that I think most people would believe, and you may or may not disagree with this, but that one of the roles of the Citizens Police Review Board as an oversight board is to increase citizen confidence in the police department. Do you see that as a role, and if so, how does the Citizens Police Review Board do that?
I think that would be a great, I really do think that the board needs to increase confidence in the police department. We need to have a better reputation of the police department, basically. Right now, we've had a lot of issues in the media that have brought about a negative connotation to the police department and also the Citizens Police Review Board. And I think that needs to change by having more respect between the two entities, like being the police Citizens Police Review Board and the police department. Having conversations between individual officers and also sergeants in charge, and making sure that that's an open communication, knowing some of their thoughts and of what some of those issues are, will help the Police Review Board understand, and hopefully there'll be a more of a respect there.
Did you do a ride along? I think did you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me what that experience was like to you.
That was a lot of fun. We had several different, I guess, things that we went to. We went to a burglary, an armed robbery, and also just general traffic violations. And most people in there, I took this after I took the class, so I kind of knew some things to look out for. And most people don't realize, as a general citizen, that the most dangerous situation is those general traffic violations, because you don't know what they have stored in their car, underneath their seat, you know. And that's one of the things, when we pulled up to someone, they were rummaging around their seat, and I was like, oh my gosh. So, but it was okay, we did all right. And then we came you know, the booking process, and you know, riding somebody in, and then also just taking care of the general. We went to one of the substations, and he had to reply to some emails. And that all takes time, that you don't realize that they're not always, you know, they're on patrol pretty much their whole shift, so it's hard to respond to a lot of those emails and communications that they have to get done as well.
Did it change anything else in, you know, your perception of the police department?
Not really. I have a general high respect for the police department. It opened my eyes to more of what they do and how they have to manage their time.
Ellen, any questions?
I am all set, Carrie? With my questions.
I just wanted to say thank you for applying, and it's impressive as a young person that you attended the training with the police department, and thanks for your interest.
Yeah, thank you.
Jerry, any questions?
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your interest. It's really very helpful for us to get somebody's view of our organization.
All right.
From your perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Thank you.
All right, okay.
I just want to apologize right now, blanket apology.
Yes, thank you.
Not accepted.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello, Sandy.
Hello.
Thank you for applying. We appreciate that. Tell us about your background and your experience and how that would help the Citizens Police Review Board.
Sure. Well, my work experience is in human resources, and the majority of my experience has to do with employee relations issues, working with management, working with employee complaints. Did that for years at the University of Missouri and in my current employment. I've been on the city's Personnel Advisory Board since 2005. My last appointment expired this September. And I feel like having had both that human resources background and dealing with employee relations issues and looking out for the best interests of both the employees and the management and my employer has given me the experience I need to look at the issues presented to the Police Review Board.
Helen?
Not yet. I just want to take one more quick peek. Can you come back to me?
Okay. Gary?
I assume you've read the ordinance about the Citizens Police Review Board.
Yes, sir.
Do you feel like they have enough authority in the city or that they need more authority to do greater work?
I do. It sounds like, from what I read, that the board can ask for information that they want. It sounds like they have the opportunity to, among other things, even go so far as to hire a private investigator if they want to get additional information. I'd also read the 2010 annual report and the 2011 report that you commissioned this summer, Mayor. And one of the things in looking at the 2010 report and the more current report, you can tell that the board is beginning to feel its own, that they're working with the police chief, and it appears to me he's being more and more, and the department is being more and more responsive as they understand what the board is asking for.
Sounds like you've had the opportunity to sit on a commissioner or board type situation before. What do you think, given the makeup of the current review board, would be your immediate impact on the group?
Well, there's only one other female in the group, so I would certainly like to balance that out with another female perspective. I think I would bring a fresh perspective. Those that are on the board, there are a couple who have been on the board for a while. Beyond that, I don't know how to answer your question.
I guess I'll just open up or give a general question, and that mm-hmm. Is there anything that you'd like to tell us that isn't on your application or that you would like to emphasize or that hasn't been asked?
There are a couple of things I wanted to say. One is, you know, as a citizen of Columbia, I've lived in Columbia since 1983, raised three sons here, and it's only been in the last few years that, as a working mother, I felt like I could even begin to give back to the city that's given me so much. And I have to say I was very disappointed I wasn't reappointed to the Personnel Advisory Board. Because you can't do everything. You kind of have to pick a something and focus on that. So I thought, what am I going to do now and stay connected to the city? What's my one thing going to be? And I do think, even though I couldn't answer your question very in any articulate way, I do feel like this is something I could commit to and give it my all as a citizen of the city. The other thing that has been interesting to me, I have to be honest, until recently I hadn't really done much research or given much thought to this board except what you see in the local media. And I've had two thoughts. One, as I've told friends and family that I was applying for this board, two of my friends made comments to me that took me aback. These are both law-abiding citizens, contributing citizens, and one of them said, don't give them your address when you apply for the job. It's sort of a tongue-in-cheek. He was concerned. And the other said, you have to watch out for the police because they're just trying to make arrests and fill their quota and come up with reasons for arresting you. And I thought, that is so it was so beyond my realm of understanding and perception of the police department. I'd had the opportunity to hear Chief Burton speak before and really felt like he had the right ideas and the right thoughts about making a culture change within his department. And so there's a conflict there that didn't make any sense to me. And I think, again, my original feeling about the efforts of the police department to try to do a good job were reinforced in reading the reports, the annual report. But I'm very interested in getting more involved.
Thanks.
How do you see the use of the police review board? Is it an advisory? Does it tweak, or does it set policy for the department? Do you see it working with Chief Burton to change the culture, or do you think that the police review board can do that from its side to change the culture?
I think we certainly would have to take our lead from the person that the council has. I don't know if the council or the city manager hires the police chief. Does the city council hire the police chief, city manager? You know, you've selected this person to lead the police department. I would see us as a resource to him and just another avenue of communication for him to be able to affect the change he sees he needs in his department.
All right. I think I've...
Anything else you want to say, Sandy?
Just thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you very much for applying and showing your interest. We really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Free council. One of them couldn't show.
She was on the interview this time. She's out of town.
Okay. All right.
I bet Fred forgot that one. I bet Fred.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Taking
the call. Oh, she did have. Her beef.
Thanks.
Isn't she doing that? You didn't clear one
thing. Yeah,
sure. You could give her an answer.
That's a dual picture.
You know, it's just, I don't like Skyhawk. I had a bad experience 3 years ago. I didn't have 9/11. I don't want to see it. He said, what are you doing with your bags? I said, well, you came in the wrong door.
You can hear that.
Well, you're on play.
That sounds
awesome. It's not even funny. No, it's not. I would have been absolutely beside myself the whole time.
Just one thing.
We'll start the pre-council meeting. Mr. Manager?
Well, thank you. We're going to move into another topic now called an abatement order of consent. So this is one of those really important issues that we almost never get to deal with. And so we're going to do a bit of a presentation, bring you up to speed on where we've come on a negotiation with Missouri DNR, and then ask for your thoughts on the matter. So with that, it will result in an action at council to agree to this abatement order of consent, consent being your consent, and we'll get into the details as we go. Dave Nichols is here to dive in.
Okay, thank you. Staff's been working with DNR since last January regarding a complaint on the number of sanitary sewer overflows the department experienced in 2010. MDNR has offered an opportunity to the city to work out our SSO issues with a timeline to meet the specific goals. The abatement order on consent is a mutual agreement between MDNR and the city, which keeps enforcement actions away from EPA and third-party lawsuits. It provides a timeline for compliance and does not change our operations other than accelerates our I&I program. With me is Steve Hunt, who's going to go into a PowerPoint presentation, and Kavanaugh is here also to help with questions, as Kavanaugh was instrumental in our negotiations. So Steve will start out with the PowerPoint. And
good evening. I'd like to start off by showing a short video clip. Earlier this year, you folks approved an ordinance that authorized us to move forward with a citywide I&I program. If you've read the paper this week, last week, you saw that we managed to turn Flat Branch green, and this is how we did it. We were testing the storm drains. We found several areas where storm drains were leaking into the sanitary sewer. So this video clip, the water you see running there is actually coming out of a storm drain sewer that we've got dammed up and full of green water. So my point of showing you this video clip is to show that we've already begun actively identifying our sources of infiltration, which we need to do as part of this work, part of this agreement. So I'll jump right into it. So how do we get here? Why are we bringing this abatement order on consent to you? It starts with an email that I received back in January 2011 from MDNR saying that they received a complaint about the number of SSOs that we received or that we experienced in 2010. So then if you step back for a minute and ask yourself, why are we dealing with MDNR here, not EPA? Well, EPA's method for dealing with these types of situations is a bit more heavy-handed. Here's Kansas City. They just signed an agreement with EPA with the Department of Justice, and they committed to spend $2.5 billion over the next 25 years, in addition to the stipulated penalties there at the bottom. Here's some particulars on why they got themselves in enforcement, the number of SSOs and basement backups. If you go across the other side of the state to MSD, they just signed this year an abatement order on consent with US EPA, $4.7 billion over a 25-year period, in addition to a $1.2 million stipulated penalty to the federal government. In MSD's order, it was specifically noted that a citizen suit was brought forward, and that's the reason that EPA pursued MSD. The Missouri Coalition for the Environment is the group. And this is important because if we move forward with this agreement, it provides us some protection, a shield, if you will, from enforcement action from EPA as well as any third-party lawsuits. So specifically to Columbia, we have had a number of SSOs, sanitary sewer overflows, over the past few years. Here's a chart that shows, if you're a numbers person, that shows the SSOs. The 3 years highlighted in red are the 3 years that really tipped the scale and got the state's attention. In particular, 2010, when we had 117 separate sanitary sewer overflow incidences. As Dave mentioned, we've been working with MDNR since January. Here's a timeline and some milestones that occurred throughout that time period. Again, this slide just reflects the fact that we've been negotiating. We're on version number 4 of the agreement that was in your packet. So we've tried to make several modifications that benefit the city. Some of the major items in the agreement are highlighted here. The first thing is our reporting. The state's asked us to put together a SSO bypass basement backup tracker. Most of this, if not all the data that they want tracked, we're currently doing. So I don't foresee this item being a major obstacle for staff to put together, but it's just a formal tracking system that the state's asked us to put together. To me, the big item in this is the second bullet there, the INI work plan. If you've taken the opportunity to read through the plan, you'll notice that there's not a lot of details in the agreement about what we're going to do, and that's because we've asked the state to put in the concept that we're going to develop a work plan and submit that after the agreement's set. And I'll get into what we're projecting this work plan is going to look like further in the presentation. The state has also asked us to put together what's called a CMOM program. It's Capacity Management Operation and Maintenance. It's basically an operation and maintenance manual for our system. Our city sewer utility, I believe, is a well-run organization system. We already have currently in place many of the components for the CMOM program. So I don't foresee that being a big item to put together as well either. And then the last thing is reporting and record keeping. We're currently reporting all of our SSOs, which is asked for in this agreement, so nothing to change there. But as part of this agreement, they've asked us to do an annual report for all the work that we're going to do each year as part of the work plan. That slide might make it a little easier. So here's the work plan in the nutshell. We got two milestones. The agreement spells out that we will do an INI study and remove INI for our top 18 priority basins. Staff has looked at the basins based upon the amount of inflow, the amount of basement backups, and the amount of sanitary sewer overflows in a particular area, and have come up with our priority basis for those basins. So we're estimating that the agreement stipulates that we will do the work in these top 18 basins by year 2021, and then do the work in the top 25 basins by year 2026. Here are the basins that we are projecting to do the work in. We've already done the work in basin number one, which is Flat Branch Basin D. We're currently working in basins 2, 3, and 4. So we'll have those done this year. Here has the work plan and how I'm projecting it would lay out in order to meet our milestones. This schedule will actually have us completing all the work 4 years earlier than what we have to. That gives us some room, gives us some float, if you will, to in case we have some problems. But this is how I'm projecting that the work plan be carried out and year by year. So you have a survey phase, a study phase, basically, and then a construction phase for each basin. And then you follow that up with some post-rehab, post-construction flow monitoring to make sure that the work was done. Here's the financial impact. There's some big numbers there. I'm projecting that this program to do it over the time frame that the state has asked us to do, we're going to spend around $57 million. And that's not in the billions at Kansas City, but we don't have the customer base that they do either. So as far as rate impacts, we plug those numbers into our rate model. And by fiscal year 2017, our sanitary sewer rates would be at $31.20 a month. That would be an average residential customer's monthly sewer bill. The other key component in the agreement that the state has inserted in the more recent versions is called the affordability section. There was a House Bill 89 that was approved in the state legislature in 2011, and that House bill, that law, requires the state to do affordability analyses on these types of actions. So in response to that law, MDNR has drafted this language and has put that in our agreement. I am suggesting that we insert this language in addition to what the state has suggested in order to try to cap any kind of financial impact that this agreement will have on our ratepayers. How that breaks down is the state and EPA often use the median household income as a measure of affordability. And more specifically, they use a 2% number of the median household income. So if you apply that to the city, the 2% median household income would be $56.22 a month for our residential customers. I'm suggesting that we try to negotiate a 1.5% number. The financial impact of the $57 million expended over the timeline I laid out, I'm projecting that be $31.20 a month would be our average customer. That is 1.1% of the median household income. So while we may be able to do the work outlined in this agreement, What this does not guarantee us is what's next. What next regulatory obstacle do we have to get over? So if we don't have some kind of financial cap on this, then we may make our rates so that they're not affordable for any kind of future regulatory item that we're going to have to face. Just as a comparison, in our 2004 master plan, it identified $123 million worth of improvements that are needed in our collection system if we do not do any wet weather type of improvements. So while the $56 million is a big number, no doubt, if we do not remove the inflow and infiltration out of our system, we're looking at some point spending somewhere around $125 million in improvements to our system to transport and then treat all that extra water. So that's the agreement in a nutshell. Open the floor for questions.
Can you go back to number six, to page 16 for a moment? That one right, that's, go back to 17, I guess. Excuse me. The 3120 and the increase on all in the rates is to do the work to get everything fixed. If you get it fixed, will the rates be rolled back for the maintenance schedule? I mean, what I'm saying is you're spending the $56 million to fix everything. Once it's fixed, can you roll the rate back for the maintenance?
Well, I think they
require $56 million over the next 12 years to do the maintenance.
Well, the rate is set on what's needed to operate the system. So if we can save money and on the maintenance costs, then we would adjust the rates as needed. But I don't.
Well, $56 million presumably catches you up and repairs everything, correct?
Yeah, those are construction costs.
Okay, but is that a constant cost every year from now for infinity, or once you're repaired, can that amount
back to the
right? I was thinking the same thing.
I mean, is it $10 million a year after everything? If everything's good, what's it take? Does that make sense?
What I'm basically projecting out, again, these are just estimates, is spending roughly $5 to $6 million a year over the next 10 years. But then the $31 a month does not take into account any additional future construction needs or future operation and maintenance needs. And these rate increases are plugged into our current rate model, so they take into account our 08 ballot and all the current operational costs that we have today. And then I've added on to those costs the $56 million that are showed up.
So the question is whether we will need $56 million extra after that 2022 period if we meet the times.
Maybe the question, what was the last slide you just showed? Could you? So maybe the question better is it after 2021, is it $7 million a year?
Yeah.
Okay. So
all we're committing to in this agreement is to do this work that I've showed.
Okay. So at the end of that,
it's possible that once we're caught up, if you will, then we'll look at our operating expenses to maintain then the system that we'd have.
Okay.
Question?
Okay, I think that's closer to what I was looking for. Okay.
I mean, this is not going to say that we won't have to do additional maintenance work, additional improvements in our system in the future.
And I think the unknown is some of the regulations putting on our wastewater plant. There's lots of discussions about what's headed down, you know, down the road for us on that. So, but I understand your question. We'd look at it at that point.
You're hoping you won't have the $6 million rehab cost every year past 2021.
Ideally, we would have a system that wouldn't need.
It would be some number less than that.
Yeah.
But there would still be rehab costs.
Oh, there's still maintenance costs. There's still line cleaning costs. There'll be maintenance expenses. So.
Can you go back to the first slide that shows the incidence of SSOs by a year? Give me a sense on scale where we stand. You say Metropolitan Sewer District of St. Louis had 7,000 SSOs or something like that in 1 year? And how much bigger are they than us?
MSD in St. Louis is the fourth largest sewer district in the nation, so they are much, much bigger than we are. Four times? At least, if not more than that. We're 650 miles of sewer, and they're 3,500 miles, 4,000 miles.
Okay, so that's maybe six times. And we had 1,300 since 2002, and they had... What were their numbers?
For St. Louis, I'm going to get back to that.
Back one. Oh, there it is. Oh,
7,000, yeah, 7,000 occasions.
That's over four years.
Yeah.
So they had a worse problem than we did. And go back to the our numbers again. Obviously, a lot of rain those 3 years. Do we have any sense of is that like a 100-year flood? I mean, we had a lot of rain for 3 years.
Just saturated ground and.
So is that an unfair? I mean, does that mean our problem is bad, or maybe you know it's not as bad as the numbers would indicate because it was the rain wasn't. You know, 1 in 100. It's unknowable, probably. But
it's unknown, and you know, over the last 3 years, is that the new norm? That high of a rain event, or are we going to see the next 10 years of no rain?
I guess I was hoping, and it's not. The answer will not be forthcoming, obviously, because it's not known. But do we have a basically structurally flawed and unsound system? Or do we have an essentially sound system that was subjected to historic rains?
My guess is somewhere in the middle. I think that's the reason I showed the video of the clip. What we're finding is we have a lot of leaks in clay lines. We have roughly 350 miles of clay sewer left still in the city. A lot of those clay lines are running parallel to or across storm sewers and drainage ways. We have a lot of cracked pipe both in the storm drainage system and sewers where they're getting cross connections. So that's where we're targeting is our fixes in those areas. But again, we're the areas I've highlighted in the map are the worst areas in town. So
just the 2010 was such an aberration to the previous years, which could mean the system is deteriorating and it's the sort of really a terrible trend. You could also speculate, it's all speculation, that was the result of historic rain, and what if over the next 5 years you're back down to a level that would not gain anybody's attention?
Awesome.
I mean, it'll be, we'll see.
If you look back in 84 and 89 and 92, those were high rain years also, but the system wasn't as old, so the age of the system has to have something to do with it. Has to have.
And just for perspective, when we were looking at expanding the water treatment plant several years ago, the INI was discussed very much in terms of the water infiltration and getting into the water treatment system and the expense of treating stormwater through the water treatment system. So this issue has been around almost since beginning of when I was on council or shortly thereafter. So, you know, it has been an issue and has been getting in to the water treatment system and ultimately leads also to the expense that your last slide showed. But if I could mention something sort of related to this, Helen and I attended the National League of Cities conference about 2 weeks ago and became aware that for private residents, the National League of Cities has a program where private residents can pay like about $4, it varies by community, insurance per month. And then if they have a trouble with the sewers, and there's a lot of clay sewers and a lot of INI from the house to the city line, they can join this program and have it paid for. And there's lots of benefits, and it applies to utility lines also. There almost seems to be no downside whatsoever. I've shared this with the city manager, and it's available to National League of City members. And so I wanted the council to be aware of it. And it seems like it's something that we should seriously consider making available to our residents so that they can start taking care of the private sewer line. So I don't know if I want to make you aware of that, and I think we should proceed in looking into doing that.
The other thing that I liked about it was that they hire local contractors to do the work.
Right, right.
Which I think is important.
And then the city gets some amount of money from the program also, so it adds to the limited budget we have too.
If I can just make a brief comment on that, and I haven't gotten the detailed legal language that comes along with that, but I saw a brief kind of little overview of the program. I'm not sure that it's going to cover some of the things, or I don't know why it would work the way that is designed to work at. One of the things that we're doing is council passed the INI program to try to find out all these INI inflows. So we're going basically starting with number one, and we're figuring out where all the leaks are. And so unlike your typical insurance where you don't know if you have new or old and having issues, there's going to be the way that I think it's going to work is you're either going to know you're going to probably have an issue, or we're going to find it out and tell you that you have an issue. And I'm not sure that the details will play out that that's going to be covered, or if it's going to be covered to a level that it's going to pay for all the necessary repairs. I guess that's what I'm not sure.
Yeah, so it would be helpful to get that information, but even if it pays for some, it gives citizens the option of using it and looking into it. So I'd be interested in getting more information on that as well.
We'll
from the
that.
City's perspective.
We'll do that research. Yeah.
We've actually actually looked into the League of Cities. They offer a water and a wastewater, a water service line and a sewer service line. We staff at a conference call with the League of City. Actually, it's a I believe it's called ESP, or it's a USP, Utility Service Provider, is actually the company. The League of Cities is, I believe, is just the marketing agent, marketing.
Utility Service Partners, Inc.
Okay, USP.
Yeah.
When I looked at it, my initial thought was, yeah, this looks really great. And then the more I thought about it, the more I looked at it, the monthly premium is $4.55. Actually, that's not right. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 for the water. And talking to the gentleman on the phone on the sewer, it's more around $6 a month. So it's $10 total for the two, water and sewer. And they cover $3,500 to $4,000 per incidence. Plus, there's another add-on if you have to cut the street. And so, you do the math on that, and it takes someone 66 years of paying their monthly premiums if they ever have a $3,500 dig-up. So I asked the gentleman on the phone, I mean, how does this math work? You're not going to get your money back. And his basic answer was, well, it's just a numbers game. We're just counting on most folks not using this. So I guess my concern, knowing that model is there, if a number of citizens in Columbia buy this service and use it, and the company's not making money, My concern would be they would just pull out and go to a different city.
When we talked to the representative there, what they were saying is because they offer it on a national level, it's sort of evens out with the people who use it and don't use it. So it's still, that doesn't seem to be a reason not to.
Well, and it may not be that they address, you know, the pre-existing conditions, which I think is what you're referring to. I mean, certainly, I don't think we're offering this as necessarily an answer to this particular problem. We've got to take some action on this issue right now. But I mean, as a benefit to the citizens of our city, I think it's certainly worth looking into because it seems to be well received and in place in a lot of cities. So I would ask that we just take a look at this, not necessarily to address this particular issue, but to make it a bit available. As you know, there are other programs, of course, also that we'll talk about at different, but you know, or could be offered to our citizens, and it may make some sense. So
we'll do an analysis and come back on this program. Absolutely. The INI and agreement that we've presented tonight, we will come back to you and ask for your approval on a finalized version. Any other questions about that one or comments? Things we should look into, think about? Thank you both.
Thank you.
I think that's it for today's pre-council meeting in the chambers.
Let me ask if staff or council has any comments to make before the meeting tonight. I will be asking, based on some documentation I got, to remove from first read the stormwater ordinance and delay it for 60 days. And that will take, I'm just a heads up, it'll take a motion and it'll take a voice vote to do that. So, but that would be when we do the consent agenda.
May I just ask a question on that? I thought that we were going to have another work session on that before we put it on the agenda.
Well, if we delay it 60 days, we'll have time, an opportunity
okay.
for that.
Certainly
right.
can.
That's another reason that would be useful, because I had not analyzed it, and I think it would help all of us to have an analysis just up prior to the time it comes up, in 60 days roughly. So
that'd be great.
All right, good.
And just a question regarding work sessions. I had asked for the Affordable Housing Task Force report to come to council and then to have as a report and then to have a work session. Is that scheduled, a work session?
We'll verify that and come back with it. Yeah, I don't know is the short answer.
Okay.
We'll check it out.
Well, let's take a break. Is this a positive omen for tonight's meeting, perhaps?
I think so.
I think so.